There's got to be an explanation to all these UFO sightings, right? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Is our favorite show of the week, isn't it? It's the Friday show, even though Lori is probably a little down from her Duluth Bulldogs.
Oh, that was a drag.
Sorry, let's not start the show with that.
What happened to my dogs?
We got it.
They were looking good.
They were looking good. I thought they were going to pull it out in regular time.
Then they went to overtime, and I'm thinking, hey, these guys are the kings of overtime. They went to five overtimes last week and won.
Yeah.
And then they looked like dead dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
And they got outplayed for about 10 minutes and then they lost.
Yeah, but there were a couple of lucky breaks on the part of the other team that the puck didn't go in because it just slid across the blue crease, missing the net by a fraction. It's, you know.
It was fun to watch. There's still a Minnesota team in the finals. I was hoping for a Mankato Duluth final, but instead we're going to get St. Cloud, Massachusetts.
I know. When I said goodbye to Casey this morning or this afternoon, he says, "Well, this is the most sports we've watched together
in a lifetime, right?
Because we watched that game last night." But I was struck at the UMD goalie that he is 6'4".
Oh my God, they make big goalies now,
but.
Is it just because they can hog the whole space?
No, I don't know that you have an advantage being a big, tall goalie like that.
Well, you can cover more space.
You do.
You can cover more space, but you can't move around in the net like an agile, smaller goalie can.
But now they are, you know, they're training them to be big and agile.
Yeah, so, I guess. He just looked gigantic, but with his skates on, he's like 6'6".
Jeez.
Yeah, he was looked like a tree in the middle of the goalie.
That's a big body.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, that was too bad. I guess I'm not going to be watching a hockey game with my dad on Saturday. Thought we'd be watching a game together.
Well, you can watch, you know, St. Cloud is still in it. It's a Minnesota team.
But you know.
Like, right. It's not as fun. I get it.
Not as much fun. Sad news about, well, we have two. We're going to talk about Prince Philip, of course, in depth, but talking about DMX, that they must have made the decision to take him off of life support.
It sounded like they knew that.
Yeah, he had a heart attack, an overdose, prolonged time on life support. He was only 50 years old.
He went without oxygen for like a half an hour.
Yeah, and he was a rapper who inspired so many people, and he was just much too young. And according to his Wikipedia, I forgot that he was in movies. He was in Romeo Must Die, Last Hour, Exit Wounds, and he had a reality television show that I did not watch, but it was 2006, and it was called DMX, Soul of a Man. It was on BET. And then he wrote a memoir in 2003 called... Earl, the autobiography of DMX. Now, I think his estate fight is going to be spectacular because has 15 children.
Yowzers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Def Jam put out a statement, and they also dropped. Now, they're saying this was always planning. They were always planning on dropping it, and this is when new music, but a new DMX song dropped today called X Moves.
Oh.
Here's a song that we've probably all danced to.
Yes.
Well,
hurdy up.
Most of us.
Yeah, I can picture you at the Wild Onion.
Not going out these years because Lori played this for me in the double white.
Like,
At the Woodbury bonfire, you were just getting crazy.
No, this is in early 2000, right?
It's like 2000 it came
out.
I
did not go out.
Julia.
I had 5 and 4 year olds. I did not go out for so long.
It was voted number 56 on VH1's greatest songs of all time.
Well,
I don't know
I missed
how
this.
You could not know that song.
I missed this.
All right. Well,
some of them, you know. There's a lot of Barbra Streisand songs that you can't even think of that I know. No, that's this true. Was just during a period in my life where I literally, I was just so in the mom
but
thing.
Like you didn't hear it on the radio.
No,
I mean, you didn't go to one party, one club. Didn't we do anything that involved going out to listen to music? Like in a club, we had to be going to Vegas. I think you just don't remember putting your arms up in the air,
jump,
going up
jump,
in here.
Jump. You know, if that was around the same song. Yeah. Jump. What's his name? Jump.
Crisscross?
Yeah, Criss-cross, I know that song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was about 90, 91, something like that.
Oh, so 10 years earlier.
Right.
That's probably when you were partying.
I was. Yeah. I was so in mom's zone in these years. I just don't remember it all, Lori. And then I was into Garth Brooks at this period of time, I think, because I feel like there was a cabin.
I don't know how that song was
everywhere.
Yeah, it was the
Isn't
song.
Isn't that something?
It was, I'm sure, the you know, one of the songs.
Songs of the Summer or something?
Yes, yeah, I just don't. It was just a huge song. All right, well, we woke up the news from Buckingham Palace that Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, has passed away at the age of 99.
Yes.
Maybe we can just throw it. I know this is right away this morning.
Yeah.
Good Morning America. It was the breaking news story. And apparently across the pond, you know, the different news people broke into their programming and newscasters were taking off their jewelry and crying and very, very upsetting.
Moved.
But this is Maggie Rooley reporting for GMA.
Just behind me, that flag was lowered to half staff just moments ago. The palace releasing that statement with their deep sorrow, and George standing here, it really does. It feels like the end of an era here in Britain, around the Commonwealth and the country. After decades with the Queen standing by her side, the two of them together shaping what the country and the Commonwealth would look like today. The palace, as you just read, confirmed again moments ago that Philip passed away. He's 99, just 2 months shy of his 100th birthday. Now, we did learn he was able to spend his final days at home in Windsor Castle with the Queen by his side. That's where he's been for about the last 3 weeks or so after being released from the hospital where he was staying for a month undergoing a heart procedure as well as other medical care. Now, again, the country is mourning, asking what we are going to do next. You know, normally a royal funeral would be something that's commemorated widely throughout the country, throughout the UK. But this one, George, it's going to look a little bit different. We're still waiting for details, but, you know, due to coronavirus restrictions, the country here in the UK is still under a strict lockdown. Things will definitely look a little smaller. But George, certainly, whatever the size of these celebrations of his life, Prince Philip will be remembered. The legacy will be remembered because, wow, George, what a life he led. 99 years, and all of them were full. More than 2,000 solo engagements, 20,000 solo engagements, more than 2,000 visits in the UK and overseas. I mean, wow. He packed so much life into his 99 years, shaping what the UK would look like today, shaping again with the Commonwealth would look like today. So a legacy that will be remembered. And of course, also looking to the Queen during this time, they were side by side together as they led this country. And George, I think of her right now because this is the first time today in this moment that she is going to be leading the country without her partner by her side.
So, I mean, they were
married 70 years.
73 years. Mm-hmm. And he was, when he was born, he was a double royal.
Mm-hmm.
He was born Prince Philippos of Greece and Denmark of the House of Schleswig, Holstein, Soderberg, Glücksberg.
Very good pronunciation.
I know. And at birth, he was in line to both thrones. And after some serious political messiness in Greece, Prince Philip and his family were exiled from the country. Philip was 18 years old. He was put in an orange crate because they were worried that they would want to harm him because he was direct to
descendant.
Be,
yes.
Well, he was going to be the next king of Greece.
Right.
And so at the age of 18, he joined the British Royal Navy and he met Queen Elizabeth, who he called Lilibet, when she was 13 and he was 18. Mm-hmm. And they were pen pals.
And we learned about this in the Rose Code a little bit more intimately because the woman he was dating at the time
was a coder
and found out that he, you know, had an interest
Well, but
didn't
that was
she
towards
a little bit
the
towards end of their relationship.
It was
at the
like
end of
3 years. He was Philip was now like 21.
Right.
So they had been dating when they could fit it in because remember how long the war went on for.
She
Britain.
Was smitten. He was the love of her life.
Yes. He called her Lilibet, and he did get his last wish to die at home.
Yes.
Which the Queen famously considers Windsor Castle her home and Buckingham Palace her office, but they both love Sandringham, and he spent the last few years at this place called Wood Farm. So we do have some details on the funeral is going to be a week from Saturday. Yeah. I'll tell you why he and Elizabeth love Wood Farm. We see Wood Farm in The Crown season 4.
Okay.
And we had listened to some audio of Barbara Walters interviewing Prince Philip, his last interview, because he was just too frank.
Yeah.
It was 1969. But the people who've played Prince Philip, Matt Smith, Tobias Menzies, they nailed
his accent. Rocco, we were going to play just so you could hear how much they talk like him. It's amazing.
Amazing. All right, listen, we'll be right back. Hey, everybody. It's Friday. We are thinking about Queen Elizabeth. I hope she is taking comfort in her corgi and having Philip be at home. I guess he did not want to die at the hospital. He has been in, failing health.
Yeah.
And he wanted to die at home. So I hope she's got a nip of gin, too, to...
Well, you know how she likes it.
4 drinks a day. But, he wanted to, I guess, like the last 5 years, he's basically lived exclusively at Wood Farm. Because I think he retired like 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 5-bedroom, it's called Wood Farm. It's a 5-bedroom house on the Sandringham Estate. And it overlooks the sea.
How lovely.
And I believe in season 4 of The Crown, we see Philip retreat here with his, the
ministry.
The chaplain.
The men.
The chaplain.
And then they invite men there to talk about feelings.
Feelings, and they were all in the war
right.
and stuff like that. So that's where he loved to be. And I guess Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, did get to have a 2-week retreat last summer to Wood Farm. But that was his very favorite place. And then with pandemic protocols, they had to come back to Windsor Castle. So anyway, and I guess at Wood Farm, when the family is there, the servants don't wear the usual royal uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
Prince Philip does not stand on any ceremony. He doesn't want anyone greeting him
right,
or standing
the pomp
up.
And circumstance.
And the Queen is known to cook and do dishes at Wood Farm.
Oh.
So that's where
so
they
they're
live.
Like husband and wife.
Kind of.
A little normal there.
And I'm just going to, for our YouTube people, I'm holding up. It's not a color photo today because my person who knows how to do that.
B. Arthur.
Yeah, she went on vacation today.
Lori, this is so funny. She's holding up a cute picture of them at their wedding day in 1947, the Queen and Prince.
Her handsome prince. And
he really was the bomb.
Yes.
I mean, you look back at the pictures of him, H-O-T, H-O-T.
Very. Well, look at Matt Smith, played the young Philip in the first 2 seasons
looks
of The Crown.
Looks so gorgeous.
And he is entitled to a big old state funeral, and it's going to be a week from Saturday, but apparently he did not want the fuss of all that, and the Queen is now entering 8 days of mourning, and so he will not lie in state, and the royals face a dilemma because there's a 30-person COVID rule for this funeral.
So
the Duke will lie in rest at Windsor Castle before there's a ceremony at the chapel, St. George's Chapel.
Where Harry and Meghan got married
yes.
2 summers ago.
And he'll be buried in Frogmore Gardens in Windsor Castle grounds. Not anywhere near
Princess Diana.
No, she's not there. She's at her family estate. But he did die on Charles and Camilla's 16th anniversary. And by all reports, Philip and Diana, he always has welcomed the outsiders because, remember, he marries Queen Elizabeth, and although he's not going to get a throne, he did have to give up the line.
Yes,
of
he did.
The throne to
now
become
explain,
Duke of Edinburgh,
okay.
And then she named him Prince Consort or something like that.
He was, yes. All right, so here's what I was having a kerfuffle with today, Rocco.
Okay.
Is that there is a lot, why Prince Philip was never named king. And there is due, and they say, and this is, I quote, it's okay. due to a long-standing rule of the British monarchy, which decrees that a man who marries a reigning queen will.
I'm Bradley Traynor.
And I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
Be referred to as, you know, the king, prince in consort or whatever, but he would never be king. And then I said, well, au contraire, he married her before she was named queen.
None of that matters.
None of it matters. But because the bottom line is, wait a second, Rocco, do you know why none of this matters?
Not really, no.
Either did I. Okay. So Lori, tell him, because this,
as with many royal traditions, you can just simply chalk this one up, and I say it to you right now, you can chalk it up to a very old and powerful patriarchy where kings always reign and a queen can be a symbolic title. So if king, like even Elizabeth's mom, when her husband became King George, she was known as queen consort or just called queen. But a queen cannot have a king be at her side if she's the true queen, because king always
usurps a queen.
That's correct, Julia. So just like in cards.
So if you think of the Queen of Hearts,
in chess. Everything.
So I didn't know this because I'm like, well, why? This rule doesn't make
any
sense.
It's just an old patriarchal.
So if there's a queen who's in charge, there can't be a king.
That's right.
And if there's a king in charge,
well, they might call you queen, but you really are officially a queen consort.
And what does consort mean?
It means you're not the real queen.
Right.
So the
real queen is the queen that's in charge without a king, and the real king is the king in charge without a queen.
So like Camilla and Charles.
Charles would be king now.
King, and she is, supposedly it's all set out that she will be princess consort. She won't even get queen consort.
Okay, because she's a divorcee.
I don't know. It's been, you know, a fuss about that.
Right.
But somehow I think that Prince Philip and Princess Diana are slightly giggling about the fact that he died on
their wedding anniversary.
On their wedding anniversary.
Because Prince Philip got a kick out of
Diana, and he's the one who encouraged Queen Elizabeth to give the speech to the nation after Princess Diana died.
So, because she was very angry with her.
And he was very welcoming to Meghan Markle.
Like Fergie, though.
No, because she was trash.
She's nothing but a poker player.
She wasn't aristocratic, you know.
Right.
And he was a snob. Remember, he's a double royal.
Right.
So
I mean that one, it didn't make sense because he was a snot to her.
So already people are blaming Harry and Meghan for him dying, which is ridiculous. And
a 99-year-old man you're going to blame on an interview with Oprah Winfrey.
And Harry is making arrangements to fly home because he's going to have to quarantine for 5 days.
Right. And I'm also going to say
Meghan isn't going to go.
No, she's so pregnant.
Those brothers sometimes
need to heal.
That's right. And what heals? Some funerals will bring people together or drive them apart. I don't know, but I think it's going to heal
them. Well, that was all I was thinking about this morning this is an opportunity for these brothers to heal.
Yes.
For that family to heal.
That's correct.
And so I'm hoping that happens.
That's right. So
we can only hope.
Anyway, so flags are at half mast. People have been crushing at Buckingham Palace, and they got the guys on horses because, you know, they're in a bit of a lockdown and they're not all supposed to be out there. So yeah, people are upset, and even though we have mixed feelings,
13
about the royal
different
family.
American presidents,
yeah,
since served and since he has been married to Queen Elizabeth, yeah. 13.
Okay. Little Nas X, he's 22 today. We have Shaletta Brundage joining us. She's got a podcast, Shaletta Makes Me Laugh. She's an author. She's a guardian angel, and her second children's book,
Daniel Finds His Voice,
is like 5 days old. So hi, Shaletta.
Hi, Shaletta.
Hey, my sisters. It's a family reunion.
It is.
I got my play brother, Rocco. I got my sisters on the phone, man. All we're missing is some chicken and potato salad. It's
that sounds good.
Shaletta, I mean, we talked to you like a month ago when you were on Andrew Zimmern's show, Family Dinners, and you wrote a book called Cameron Goes to School. Now you've got Daniel Finds His Voice, which tells the story of your little Daniel with autism singing his way. And this song,
yes,
by Lil Nas X. We're always just amazed at your incredible energy and gift for just being a guardian angel.
Girl, y'all know y'all breathe life into me. I was in there dead, and y'all just breathed life into me, and I studied you ladies and set up under your leadership, and you helped me grow and learn how to do it all, because we can do it all if we decide that's what we want to do. And, you know, it's never too late to chase and go after your dreams. And I always wanted to write children's books, and you know, once my kids were diagnosed with autism, I wanted to write books to educate children about autism. You know, there's a lot of books for adults who have children with autism, but nobody's educating kids.
Right.
You know, these children that are in class with my babies, they're going to grow up and be their bosses and their supervisors. And I need them to know now that their friends with autism are just like them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And to treat them the same way they treat anybody else and to love them the same. They have a little bit different, but they're no different than anybody else. And so I just wanted to make it my business to educate other children about autism, because nobody was doing that. And so I used Daniel's story about how he found his voice through music. And a lot of parents are telling me they never thought of that. They never tried that. Because, you know, we got three with autism, and the other two were doing great with therapy. Daniel wasn't doing anything. The needle wasn't moving. Mm-hmm. And it was something about that song, something about him hearing that song. It triggered, ladies, something in his brain. And at 4.5 years old, after not talking, he just walked up to me and started singing that song. And that's when we knew music is the way to reach him. It's how you teach him. And everything he learns through music.
And that video went viral.
Right,
and Lil Nas X, you guys talked.
You guys went viral. And CBS just profiled you again last week, which was so great.
Girl,
CBS Gail Morning
King
News
was talking about my baby. And
I know.
Book, and y'all, it's the book is as hot as fish grease on Good Friday. I'm telling you, we printed 5,000 copies. The book came out this week, and the book is gone.
Oh, wow.
Like, I went to the warehouse. I had to see it for myself. I'm not saying they lying, you know, because the people at Beavers Palm Press have been really good to me. But mm-hmm. the publisher was like, we got to print 5,000 more copies. I was like, what? It just got released this week, y'all.
Yeah.
They're like, no, they're gone. You have 38 books left at the warehouse.
That's incredible. And you had Lily Coyle illustrate this book just like you did with Cameron Goes to School. It's so darling.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Lily helped me write it, and Darcy Bell Meyer from Wisconsin, she's the illustrator.
Okay.
She's got a baby with autism, too. So,
so
I mean,
good.
And that's the thing. You know, the words are cute, but the pictures are amazing.
The pictures are amazing. You know, one of the things, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Shaletta Brunridge. She has a new book out, Daniel Finds His Voice, and it's a children's book talking about educating other people about what children are going through with autism, and how Daniel, through hearing, Gonna Rock My World. What's the name of that damn song?
Old Town Road.
That's right. That was an earworm for everybody. But in the back of the book, you tell us a few good things to know about autism and music. And I thought that this was really helpful for everybody to know, you know, how the language of music really does teach so many different walks of life. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was just eye-opening for me how nothing worked for Daniel except music. And, you know, I'm in a lot of parent groups and, you know,
I don't know how you have time for all this.
A lot of autism moms. And I'm like, you know what? I got to let these parents know that music is a way that you could reach your nonverbal kids, because I never thought about it, and a lot of parents were telling me, ladies, that they hadn't thought about it either. So I work with the Autism Society of Minnesota and awesome.org, and they helped me come up with some tips for parents and teachers and everybody about how music can impact kids who have special needs, especially kids with autism. So, you know, we want to entertain, we want to provide a good book, we want to make sure it's colorful and fun, but we also want to educate. And that's what it's all about, especially for Autism Awareness Month in April, is to educate people about autism.
Yeah. And no two people with autism are the same.
Mm-mm. No, I got three of them in my house with autism, and all three are completely different. The therapy that worked for one doesn't work for the other. My son Brandon is 8 years old, and he communicates through pictures and drawings. And he has no social anxiety, but, you know, he has difficulty learning certain things. My daughter Cameron, very smart, social anxiety. And then Daniel, of course, you know, couldn't talk until he was 4.5 years old. But look what happened in 2 years since he went viral singing that song, since he learned how to talk through music. He's 6 years old. He's reading on a fourth grade level. Okay. Daniel is the best reader in our house.
That's amazing. That's amazing, Shaletta.
And you know what I want to do is offer hope to parents that it can and will get better. Because you get this diagnosis from the doctor that your child has autism, and you think, this kid is never going to go to college. I'm never going to be the mother of the bride. They're going to live with me all their life. They're never going to get out of this pamper. They're going to keep eating puree food. You know, I'm going to always have to change their butts. And nobody tells you it could get better.
Yeah.
It could be better. And so that's what I want people to see with my children. And people always say, you tell your business too much. You always sharing. Every time I look up, you're talking about the kids. Well, I want somebody out there who went through what I was going through to know that it can get better, and to give them hope to never give up on their children, because it could be a little country rapper from Georgia song that unlocks your child's mind and sets them on the course of success.
Yeah, that's so
good. It's just such a good note. How do people order your book?
Yes.
It's on Amazon, and it's on, they got 38 copies left, so they got to hurry up.
But yeah, we did post a link, and I know guys will print more.
I love, though, it's already gone to reprint, but this is what I love about local folk. Kowalski's, our local market, they bought up books. Okay. They put books in every single one of their stores. Okay. They're signed, and they got bookmarks in them.
Oh, nice.
They're committed to autism awareness. So if you are in the Twin Cities and you got a neighborhood Kowalski's, they've got copies there.
That's wonderful, fabulous. Because we like to support our local people.
I do, too. I mean, you know, I'm big on Amazon because that's where everybody is, and your credit card number's already saved.
Yeah.
But I also like to walk in the store and support our local businesses, especially the ones who support local people. Because let me tell you something. Target's not putting local authors in the stores. Walmart's not putting local authors in the stores. Kowalski's is.
Yeah. Shaletta, I want to ask you, have you been fielding reality show projects since your appearance on Family Dinners on Discovery Plus with Andrew Zimmern?
Oh, you know what? I've been working with Maria Oz and Committee Films, and she actually is talking to some folks about our family.
I believe it.
So many people saw the episode, and they were like, we love your family. We need to see more positive stories like this. Because, you know, that's what Chip and Joanna Gaines' network is all about. Is about positive stories. So, girl, they working on that. Girl, who you talking to? Are you psychic or you know somebody?
No, I mean, in watching the episode, you guys really are, you're just the warmth and the love. And it's also representation that we don't see. I mean, both autism and black.
We ain't seen no black people on TV like that since the Huxtables. I told my husband, look at us, Claire. Look at us. It's like Theo and Denise. And
Shaletta, I want to ask you, you know, there is the Derek Chauvin trial is happening and we're watching it, but the one we're watching started long before George Floyd was murdered. I feel like Black America has watched every imaginable way from different ways to try to prove that your lives don't matter. And I know I talked with a couple of girlfriends and they were trying to say to me that it was too much for them because I did, like, really, both Julie and I and Rocco, we watched the first day of the opening and I had never watched the whole 9 minutes and 29 seconds. And I had a couple And they were white friends. And they said, oh, I just can't watch that. And I said, you have to watch that. You need to bear witness so that this stops. And I'm just wondering how you are doing with, here we go again. We've got to be shown in 100 different ways that this man's life was taken away and it wasn't right.
It's emotionally exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, we've been through this so many times. And then we keep going through it over and over and over again. And the difference here, ladies, is that it hit close to home.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because it's right down the street.
Yep.
But this is what it did. It woke so many people up. And, you know, you ladies have been woke for a long time, so this doesn't apply to you. But there were some people who, you know, had been my friends, who I had been talking to, who I had been communicating with. And when this happened, they called and they said, I get it now. Mm. I understand. It's like a veil was lifted. You know, after you get married and you say, I do's, and you lift the veil, and it's all of a sudden you can see better.
Mm-hmm.
The murder of George Floyd created a movement where it lifted a veil on this country about racism so that we could talk about it, so that we could do something, so that we can make an impact, so we can just stop hashtagging and putting out cute little statements,
right,
but that we are looking around in our communities and in our corporations and saying, this ain't right, we got to do something better. You know, Target just committed to spending $2 billion with black businesses. And that wouldn't have happened without George Floyd.
You're right.
So, so what I try to do is I try to look at the positive impact that his life has had on our country.
Well, I mean, I remember as a little girl, you know, I think she and her mom were interviewed on GMA, and she just had like a teddy bear in her arm, and she just said, my daddy changed the world.
Yes. Oh, he did. I mean, think about it. He got Mitt Romney to march in a Black Lives Matter rally.
There you go. No kidding.
If he hadn't died. And I didn't want him to die. I wish he could have lived because he's got a small child to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
But look at the impact that his legacy has had on all of us. On all of us.
All
and
of
so
us.
Now the work that you ladies have been doing for decades. Other women are doing too.
Yeah.
It's like y'all were the outliers. Now you're trendsetters because all of the allyships, all the work that you have done, all the commitment that you have made to women of color, especially black women, other women have you to emulate. They can come to you. They can look at your history and your track record and see what you have done for black women and do that in their companies. Y'all didn't even realize y'all were doing it, but you were. And now everybody else is playing catch up to try to do now what y'all have been doing for 20 years.
Oh, for crying out loud. You toot our horn too much. But thank you.
I mean, I'm not saying anything that's not true. I'm a living witness to the way you all work with women of color at that station, how you give us a voice, how you give us an opportunity. I came to town. I didn't know anybody. Y'all put me on. When I came on, y'all kept me there. Hello.
Yeah,
hello.
I know. I know.
Okay? Oh, how many times have I used you for a reference? How many times have I had somebody to call you and you vouch for me? How many times have you stood up for me? And it's not just me. I thought I was special. But this is what you do for women, no matter what the color, but especially when it's time to stand up was right. And we have got as women to do that for one another.
Yeah, you're so right. Preach it, Shaletta.
Yeah,
and
no
we
kidding.
Want people to tune in, check out your podcast, Shaletta Makes Me Laugh. And you're on Facebook and
buy the book. Daniel finds his voice.
That's right. Shaletta is funny on Twitter. And we know we're gonna talk to you again. I mean, very soon, I'm sure.
I love you ladies, and thank y'all so much for everything you do for this community and especially for women of color.
Oh, we love you back, Shaletta. Take care.
Oh my gosh, she's so damn cute.
All right, listen, when we come back, we've got a really great, another great story to share with you. I don't lose my religion after I talk to Shaletta. We find our religion.
Okay, what did she say? It's hotter than fish grease on Good Friday or something like that?
Yeah, it's on Good Friday, yeah.
That
she has so many good, funny sayings. And, you know, our other friend, Mary Shaw, who is from the South, also had some good, funny sayings.
Oh, we called them homilies. She had all these little mini homilies that she would just, I loved it.
I'm sure
it must be a Southern thing to have all these cute,
very descriptive, florid ways of saying things. It's fabulous.
Right. So the book is Daniel Finds His Voice. It's really
sweet.
And we did
put a link to the book up. Yeah.
It's sweet.
Something else that is super sweet that we posted, courtesy of GMA, is that this young lady by the name of Callista, she's got a TikTok account, and her little sister Worthy, they have millions of views because Worthy is the little sister, and she's Down syndrome, and she might be 7, but she's got glasses, and she styles Callista's hair, her older sister, and puts makeup on her.
It's the sweetest. The sisterhood relationship is just so loving and kind and sweet.
And
it's beautiful.
It's darling.
It is.
I mean, that was one of my fondest things about my mom's dad, was he would let us style his hair.
Your grandpa.
And he had Brill creamed hair.
My mom's dad,
he had Brill creamed hair, and he wore it parted down the middle, and then it went back into
like alfalfa.
Went all the way back. Yep. It's kind of a way that like film stars of the 30s would wear their hair, but he would let us part it in the other direction. He would let us get hard stuff and give him what we didn't know was a mohawk, but was a mohawk. And the whole time we'd be doing it, he knew how to move his ears up and down. He'd take quarters out of his nose.
And we would comb my dad's toupee. And my mom's wigs and the foam hats.
There is
everyone had their own beauty school training.
Yes, yes. And we were so crazy about it that I remember one year my mom got my sister and I, we got like some kind of might have been a Barbie head with long hair.
Yeah, there was a Barbie styling. I don't know if it was Barbie, but there was a plastic head that looked like Barbie, where the plugs of the hair would be plugs.
Wasn't there a Farrah Fawcett one?
Maybe.
I don't know. We were too old by that point. That was the one that you had, but it was just something. And something about someone playing with your hair and styling it. I mean,
it's a gloomy day out.
It's really sweet.
It's really sweet. And then we also posted the life of Prince Philip over the decades. And when you see the younger pictures of Prince Philip, Matt Smith, to play him in The Crown season 1 and 2, was perfect casting.
And the voice.
Yeah, the long, lean body, that blonde hair.
Yep.
Well, this was kind of cool. On the Today Show today, Joe Fryer.
And you say, who?
Joe Fryer, one of their correspondents. He had a great story on American Sign Language interpreters, a group that's played an important role during the pandemic, and introduces us to Nick Zapko, the American Sign Language interpreter for Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. So here's the story.
This past year has taught us about the importance of getting accurate information quickly, but access to that info is often lacking for those who are deaf and hard of hearing. ASL, American Sign Language interpreters, are working to change that, including one in Minnesota who has developed quite a following. In a period marked by a deadly pandemic in Minnesota's hospitals, and by protests and civil unrest on the state's streets, Governor Tim Walz takes to the podium often.
Hi, everyone. It's good to see you.
And is not alone. By his side, Nick Zapko, the ASL interpreter, who has become a bit of a celebrity.
Honestly, I have no words to describe it. At the same time, I'm thrilled that it's happened because it's brought recognition to interpreters and access.
What should people know about the importance of the
Someone
work you do?
Someone speaking for her.
When there's unrest and events, it's critical that we get the information now and not later.
Zapko learned about the importance of access early. She was born deaf, growing up in a hearing family.
Friends and family would laugh at something that happened. I would ask what happened, and they would say, oh, it was really nothing. It was too difficult to include me. So I felt distant from my own family, and I lived like that.
That is why she's so passionate about ASL, which is a visual language that uses tone, inflection, facial expressions, which you don't get with just captioning at the bottom of the screen.
And of course, there was somebody who was signing for her, and
because she's deaf.
But someone, like they say in the story, and I don't think we have time to play it. Rocco, do we?
I don't know. What do we got left? We have about a minute left before we got to go to the top of the hour. I can play a little bit.
Okay, let's play a little bit where they explain that someone is signing to her, and that's how she signs. Right.
That is why she's so passionate about ASL, which is a visual language that uses tone, inflection, facial expressions, which you don't get with just captioning at the bottom of the screen.
Minnesotans must wear a mask indoors.
So how does Zapko know what the governor is saying? She works with Patty McCutcheon, a hearing interpreter, who stands off camera, listens to the governor, and feeds that information to Zapko.
And then I take it and present an ASL for a wider audience that has many different needs, and I can better match that.
Here's a question I know you get a lot. Why are there two of you? Why can't Patty just sign?
As an individual who's deaf and has that native language, native culture, native behavior growing up, that formative experience puts the two of us together and makes the message whole. I cannot do
and
what I see up there.
Is that enough, Rocco? Yeah, and she really does have the best facial expressions. And if you see the movie Sound of Metal,
yes,
Riz Ahmed in all of his interviews said, American Sign Language, it is so colorful. It is so amazing.
My high school was a theater for the deaf at Highland Park Senior High.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was very happy to see that on the Today Show. Your Nick Zapko, she's amazing. All right, thank you. We'll be back.